Stop and Swerve, Pile Driver, the wrestling album to his pulverizing smash. On the total WWF experience, you need Pile Driver, the wrestling album too. There's no match for Pile Driver. Buy it on Epic Records and cassettes.
South Connection, welcome to this episode of Territorial. I am your host, Sean Kidd, and for this episode, a really personal one for me here on this one, as goofy as it may sound. So hopefully you guys heard the wrestling album podcast that I did around the wrestling album and some of the matches we looked at in that and some of the players who were around at the time. Well, the WWF did a sequel in 1987, and it was known as Pile Driver, the album, which I guess in a lot of wrestling circles is probably the bigger of the two albums. I mean, I know for me personally, I like the music and I like it better. I like it better than the first album for a lot of different reasons. I think the music's catchier. I think some of the songs are better. I think it relates to the talent a little bit better in terms of the individuals. So there's a lot of reasons why I like it. But for me, the big reason why I liked it is in 1987. So this album was released September 21st of 87. And I got it for Christmas that December. Well, what I also got for Christmas that December was tickets to the Capitol Center where I lived. My uncle got them for me, and it was a matinee show. And I'll always remember the main event was, of course, Ted DiBiase and Andre the Giant taking on Bam Bam Bigelow and Hulk Hogan. So it resonated with me. And 1987 for me as a wrestling fan just stands out. Like, there's so much that happens in 1987, and there's probably going to be a lot of these episodes, one that I already did, obviously, the end of 87. I did one on Dusty Rhodes, and I did one on his feud with Bobby Eaton going into 88. And you're going to have a lot of 87s coming out of me, because 87 for me, there's so many different things going on. You got the indie NWA, you got Lex Luger coming in, you got Ric Flair versus Barry Windham, which is coming up very soon. You have the Garvin versus both Flairs. You get the Fireball incident with the Midnight Express. In the WWF, you have the build to Survivor Series. You have WrestleMania 3. There's just so much going on and so many different angles going on that it was a great time to be a wrestling fan in 1987. So this album for me kind of encompasses some of the greatness of 87 just in a different way. So let's talk about the album a little bit. So tonight's episode, what we're going to do is going to be very similar to the wrestling album that we did, where we'll talk about the person that sang the song, we'll talk about the song itself, and then we'll kind of share a match from that person that was in the moment or not too far off from the moment from the time frame that song was in, and go from there. We'll even have some live performances from a few of these folks that might have done some live performances on the Slammies, and we might even have a few of these that were played from a music video standpoint. But here we go. Piledriver, the Wrestling Album 2, as I said, is the second soundtrack album released by the World Wrestling Federation, released on September 21st, 1987 by Epic Records. The original vinyl LP release of Piledriver featured a very iconic headshot. For me, very iconic, because I can remember to this day of Hulk Hogan wearing a construction hard hat on the front cover, which also went into the whole construction piece of the video of the main song Piledriver, which was sung by Coco Beware. It is the only WWF album to never been released on a CD. In addition to the album, there was a VHS videotape version, which came out in 1987 by Coliseum Video. And what it did is it showed a lot of the videos that were introduced on the WWF syndicated program. And that's what they did. They would just enter them on the syndicated program, but then they also made a Coliseum Home Video. The songs Crank It Up and Wake Up Alone did not have music videos made for them. Several songs on the album would be used as entrance themes for the wrestlers. You had Strike Force use the instrumental version of Girls in Cars. Coco Beware used Piledriver. He sang it. Honky Tonk Man uses self-titled track. Honky Tonk Man, pretty iconic theme for him. Demolition, probably my favorite song out of this whole entire thing, was used for that team. I think the song actually made the team even better. It's just so kick-ass. Jive Soul Bro for Slick, which came from Jive Soul 4, a remake of a song from a rapper, and I talked about that on a wrestling album, because he also did, it was the same rapper that Roddy Piper did a song by on the wrestling album. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And then you had Crank It Up, which was used for the tag team of the Young Stallions, Paul Roma and Jim Powers. But they were doing a storyline where Jimmy Hart supposedly created it for the Hart Foundation, but the Stallions supposedly stole it. For some reason in my head, if you think about the song Crank It Up, and we're going to play all the songs tonight as we lead into stuff, I can't see Crank It Up being a theme for the Hart Foundation. I just look at Jim Neidhart and Bret Hart, and I can't imagine them coming out to Crank It Up. But anyway, that's just me. So the track listing. So we have Girls in Cars. We have Piledriver, Honky Tonk Man, Demolition, Jive Soul Bro, Crank It Up, Waking Up Alone, Hillbilly Jim's follow-up from Don't Go Messing With a Country Boy, and Gertrude, who I have no idea who Gertrude is. I kind of like that song. We'll talk about that in a little bit. You got Vince McMahon, iconic performance in the Slammies of his version of Stand Back. Based on current world, he probably should have stand back for quite a while, and he didn't, which is why he's no longer around anymore. And then we got Mean Gene Okerlund and Rick Derringer doing Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo, which is a pretty amazing video, which we'll talk about later on in this show. And then an underrated one for me, and I like this one, and I believe Chad and JT did kind of a ranking on this one, on the album. It's If You Only Knew, and this is kind of like the Land of a Thousand Dances, the song on this album where all the stars get together and sing about If You Only Knew, and the lyrics are pretty funny, What I Was Going to Do to You. It's basically if you knew what I was going to do about kicking your ass and what would happen. And what I really liked about this song, which is unique particularly, is it focused on like an individual feud. Like you had a group of wrestlers singing to each other, but then towards the back end of it, you had Hulk Hogan and Ted DiBiase singing towards each other about their feud that was going on at the time. And you got to imagine that was probably August at the latest that they recorded this song, and the latest August they kind of did this, and this came out in September. And the fact that their feud kind of lasted and culminated probably for the most part in September of, I'm sorry, WrestleMania 88, and this album came out in September, means long-term booking-wise, these guys knew where they were going to go in the WWF. And if you think about that now, like, so let's see, October, November, December, January, February, March, February, you're talking about 5 or 6 months to the main event. And if they knew that's the direction they were going to go here, that's pretty freaking amazing. So I wish we could book that far in advance nowadays, but it just doesn't happen. So that's the songs. The first two songs of the evening. So the first song you already heard was Pile Driver, which we talked about at the start of the show. It's what opened our show. It's sung by Coco Beware. The second song that we're going to talk about tonight is Honky Tonk Man. And Honky Tonk Man's an interesting character. Came in as a face. One of those goofy, you know, 86 gimmicks, you know, cartoony. Well, the fans hated him. They did this whole fan vote, turned him heel, and then the rest is history. You have the Honky Tonk Man that will forever be a heel coming out of that, and he finished out his career as a heel for the most part. But what's interesting about this is, so we heard Pile Driver, we heard Honky Tonk Man. So the first match we're going to look at tonight is actually Coco Beware taking on Honky Tonk Man, and it is from April 6th, 1987, Pride time. So after WrestleMania, Coco had faced, I believe it was Butch Reed, lost there. Honky Tonk Man beat Jake the Snake Roberts. So these guys going at it, it's pretty cool. So we're going to talk about that match in a minute. But since we already listened to Pile Driver, we're going to listen to Honky Tonk Man, and then I'll be back to talk about the match.
Got long sideburns and my hair slicked back. I'm coming to your town in my pink Cadillac. I'm just a honky tonk man.
He's a honky tonk man.
I'm just a honky tonk man.
He's a honky tonk man.
I'm just a honky tonk man. I'm cool. I'm cocky. I'm bad. I pick a mean guitar. I wear a blue suede shoes. You ought to hear me sing the snakeskin blues. I'm just a honky tonk man.
He's a honky tonk man.
I'm just a honky tonk man.
He's a honky tonk man.
I'm just a honky tonk man. I'm cool, I'm cocky, I'm bad. Roll, Elvis, let the honky tonk man show you how to rock and roll. Elvis knew he couldn't guarantee it if it had handles on it. Beside me, the colonel's in the back. I'm coming to your town in my pink Cadillac. I'm just a honky tonk man.
He's a honky tonk man.
Just a honky tonk man.
He's a honky tonk man.
I'm just a honky tonk man. I'm cool. I'm cocky. I'm bad. I'm just a honky tonk man.
He's a honky tonk man.
I'm just a honky tonk man.
He's a honky tonk man.
I'm just a honky tonk man.
He's a honky tonk man.
I'm just a honky tonk man.
He's a honky tonk man.
I'm just a honky tonk man. I'm cool. I'm cocky. I'm bad. I'm just a honky tonk man. I'm cool. I'm cocky. I'm ba 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 ba.
Here we go. So it's Coco versus Honky Tonk Man, 4-6-87 from Primetime. Gorilla and Bobby are on commentary. Honky with a very rude-like sell on a Coco atomic drop. For those of you that probably already know this, Rick Rude is very well known for his atomic drops. If you ever want to listen to the 7 Months of Danger podcast, that was also on NoSo. For the most of last year, where we did a miniseries looking at the Dangerous Alliance, I think the highlight of Rick Rude for any Rick Rude match was if he sold an atomic drop. But that's a whole other story. But here, definitely Honky does kind of a similar thing. And then Coco smacking Honky's hair repeatedly was pretty funny. Honky was also yelling at Frankie, cutting promos on him, which was also great. Honky actually has some good working punches if you pay attention. It's like Memphis Lawler, including a second rope fist drop, which makes sense based on the fact that they are related in some form or fashion. Honky Tonk Man's pretty savage, ramming Coco's back off the back of the head and neck into the turnbuckle, like just shoves it It literally looks like whiplash on Coco's neck, which was a pretty cool visual. Honky does an impressive single-arm fireman's carry where he just takes him by the arm and literally carries him over on a carry with his one arm. And a second rope elbow, that surprised me. On the second rope elbow, he gets to the second rope, and Coco's laying like in the middle of the rope, and he literally just almost walks the rope and drops the elbow, which was really shocking. Coco gets a good kick face comeback with punches, headbutt, and drop kicks, and he dumps Honky Tonk Man over the top rope, and we will play the audio of the rest of the match from here.
Frankie loving every minute of it. Now headbutt. Could be the beginning of the end. Turned into a Pier 6 brawl here. Drop kick, a beauty, standing drop kick. And another one. Oh, look at that 360. He went down head first. The mouth trying to get him back on his feet.
How do you think Coco will have it in him?
Coco just exploding.
Not over yet, though. Honky Tonk's going to pull it out. He's going to pull it out. He's got faith in the guy.
Suplex from the outside. Oh, look at that, Jimmy Hart holding on to the legs of the Honky Tonk Man. Oh, look at that, scoop the right foot of Coco. Give me a break. What a miscarriage of justice.
What? I was getting a floor cue over here from the lady here. I
wanted to watch the monitor.
Yes, Jimmy Hart did grab the Honky Tonk foot.
Yeah, then he grabbed Coco's foot as well.
I missed that. I can't do it all.
Give me a break.
Honky Tonk Man wins with outside interference, thanks to the Colonel. Surprisingly, really solid match. Coco can go, but Honky in the ring, really not his forte. But this is also a really early WWF run, and thought he held his own, and he's absolutely hateable. There's no doubt about it. He should have been a heel. The fact that you brought him in as a face was absurd to begin with. But I went 2.25 on this. A little surprising to me. I mean, for the right reason. Honky Tonk Man impressed, and Coco has always impressed me. If you go back and look at Coco in old UWF or even in Memphis, he has a really great match with Ric Flair in November of 85 that came out of nowhere for me. So I'm a big fan of Coco Beware. Up next is Stand Back by Vince McMahon. And currently Vince McMahon, as we know, in current times, not doing the greatest. He is out of TKO, ex-owner. But at the time of the WWF, everyone knew he was the owner. However, probably a lot of people didn't know the kind of person he was. However, when you watch this video, this performance from the Slammy Awards for the 1987 Slammy Awards, it's pretty apparent who Vince McMahon is. Vince McMahon's about Vince McMahon. He's all about showboating, all about his ego, all about putting himself out there, surrounded by beautiful women, dressed in a tux. I wouldn't say beautiful women, but like women. It's like a Vegas style kind of showing. You have Hulk Hogan and the Hulkamaniacs. Hogan, I believe, is playing the bass. Off to the side, you have Savage, Jake the Snake Roberts, and Brutus Beefcake playing trumpets. On the other side, you have JYD, George Animal Steel, and the Killer Bees playing other instruments. This video is insane, and Jesse's intro is too really great. Considering the man who can't talk, you know, kind of like maybe a kayfabe thing about what a maneuver every time that Vince would talk about commentary and a move that he didn't know back in the day on syndicated TV that kind of went on into life in general. He lives in his own world, and as you watch his performance with Vince McMahon, I think you could totally see that this was the world he lived in. This is the world he thought he lived in, and he thought he was untouchable. So watching this video now kind of gives you a little bit different perspective of him, but at the time, probably one of the greatest pieces of video or entertainment wise you'll ever see, encompassing your fan favorite WWF wrestlers and Vince McMahon coming out of his shell at the time. I think this is probably the first time anyone, at least for me at that time, based on his commentary. I mean, Jesus Christ, Vince McMahon, this is crazy. So interesting thing to watch here, but let's listen to the video performance. And when you get a chance, definitely go watch the video of this on YouTube, Stand Back by Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan and the Hulkamaniacs.
And now performing our next nominated tune is a man who has repeatedly proven that he cannot talk, and who tonight will prove that he can't sing either. Vince McMahon performing, and I believe this is good advice for all of you here and at home. to put your fingers up, your ears, and stand back, Vince McMahon.
One hell of a performance for Vince McMahon, almost very Mark-ish. So yeah, no surprise if you go back and watch this in 1987. As I said earlier, Vince lived this life. This was his world. This was his circle, so to speak, and seemed to live that every day up until recently. But that's a whole other story that we'll move on to. So our next set of songs, the first one we're going to hear first, we'll talk about that one first. So Crank It Up by Jimmy Hart. Jimmy Hart, as I said on the Wrestling Album Pod, had been in a music band before. This song, very high tempo, very high energy, was interesting to me that we had talked about the Young Stallions took this theme, and they were trying to do this whole thing around the fact that the Stallions stole it from the Hart Foundation. And listen to this song, and then tell me if you can hear Bret Hart or see Bret Hart and Jim the Anvil Neidhart ever coming out to this song, ever. I just don't see it. But anyway, it fits the Young Stallions. Not sure if that's really where they were going to go with it, and then they assessed the song afterwards and said, oh, geez, we can't put that with Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart. That makes no sense. It's more for young kind of team. So this will go to the Young Stallions. We'll play this song first, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the next song we're going to talk about, because it leads to a match between two teams whose songs we're representing in the moment.
We were cruising the streets, looking for some action. Had my radio playing on my rock and roll station. Saw three hot ladies down by the square. I said, jump in, girls, let's go party somewhere.
Break it up, blow it out. Rip it up, let's party now. Break it up, blow it out. Rip it up, let's party now. I pull on my shades, I comb back my hair, I slip my arms around her, I wouldn't get nowhere. I said, hey, look, baby, I think you're kinda cute. Steady, I wanna party with you.
Crank it up, blow it out. Rip it up, let's party now. Crank it up, blow it out. Rip it up, let's party now.
Jam it!
Favorite song from the Pile Driver album, but I personally like it. I think it's kind of catchy, and Jimmy Hart does a really good job. So the next song that leads into it, and the reason why we're doing these songs back to back, is probably my ultimate favorite song on the entire album, and it's Demolition. Their theme music and the video for it with, like, reminds me of Terminator 2 with all the nuclear explosions in it. If you remember some of the Armageddon pay-per-views, had all the blasts going on. This video was amazing. The song is amazing. I actually think this song actually made Demolition who they are. They were good. They were seen as kind of Road Warrior ripoffs a little bit. However, I think this song actually cemented them as their own team. They came out of that Road Warriors kind of thing. And I think this song had a big, huge part of it, to the point of where they grew in popularity. And they actually turned face eventually, because the song kicks ass. People cheered them. And I think this song went a long way with helping them do that. So we're going to listen to my favorite song by Rick Derringer, Demolition. My favorite song off the album, that is.
Harmony remains.
likes that song, I got nothing for you. I don't think I've ever met a wrestling fan that isn't a big fan of the Demolition song. So anyway, Crank It Up by Jimmy Hart and Demolition by Rick Derringer takes us to the match I want to talk about. So it's Demolition versus the Young Stallions. This is from June 6, 1987 edition of Superstars. So Demolition about 6 months in here, and they have already moved on from Mr. Fuji to Mr. Fuji from the original manager, Luscious Johnny V. This is a rematch from an earlier syndicated match, I believe a month or two before, when Demolition Bay came in and they literally destroyed the Stallions, like just destroyed them, which is actually brought up, which is kind of a cool storyline narrative. You didn't see things like that, like this. I mean, it was basically a squash match. And they mentioned that part of the narrative is the Stallions are in a picture-in-picture, are already ready for the demos, talking about how last time they caught them by surprise, this time they're ready. The opening video of me watching this match is an edition of Superstars, and you get the cool, like, jazzy opening that with the really dent, 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 and then it does that that whole dent, 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 dent thing, which is really badass. Just cool jazz. Vince calling Jesse a broken down Indiana Jones, and then you have the pictures of all who is wrestling on the show today with their names written in cursive in the pictures, which is my WWF right here on Saturday morning with the Frosted Flakes. This whole intro, this whole thing to Superstars that I just talked about definitely was like peak wrestling for me. The Stallions get a little bit of shine, almost too much, as they control the opening until Powers gets dumped across the top turnbuckle. And then Demolition start double, just beats the shit out of them, double teaming them. Roma gets a hot tag, and then this happens after the hot tag.
Scoops up, Powers slams him down to the canvas. And oh, missing with a headbutt. Boy, did he nail himself there. That was a saving maneuver by Jimmy Powers. And the ring now. Paul Roma drop kick. Roma going to work on Axe, trying to set him up. Maneuvering in now and out to the buckle. Ooh, ha.
Whoa.
That man knew it. He got him.
Here are your winners, Demolition.
Smash Demolition. Rough match for Young Powers and Roma. Let's go back to the replay.
Well, you know, Powers and Roma, you have to give credit. They gave everything they had, but against these two, it just wasn't enough. These two are truly, truly devastated. And, of course, and here it is right now. It shows Roma getting beaten.
They gave it their all, Powers and Roma. Not quite enough for Demolition. Let's take you now to the update.
Syndicated squash, kind of posing as an attraction match, per se. And I love the end. Literally, it was just a savage clothesline out of the corner. Weird hearing the Demolition theme at end without the lyrics, but we are still 3 months from the album dropping. So I went 1.5 on this. Again, I love these like syndicated matches where they kind of frame it as a main event type thing. The Stallions are kind of coming into their own a little bit. So they're kind of like a Jobbers to the Stars type environment thing, kind of similar to Coco, but not at Coco's level yet. But yeah, still pretty cool moment in time here and two pretty good songs to come out of it. So solid squash. I go 1.5 on it. Of course, now is probably one of the most well-known ones coming off of this Pile Driver album, and is Jive Soul Bro by Slick. And the moment this represents tonight is also an interesting one because it features the debut match of somebody who they have built up and built up and built up about who's his manager going to be. They did a similar angle with the Macho Man Randy Savage back in the day when he actually picked Elizabeth. But this one will be centered around Bam Bam Bigelow, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But first off, Jive Soul Bro, if you remember on the wrestling album, I brought this up earlier, that there is a rapper called Captain Chameleon who did a version of Roddy Piper's song that was very much different than what he sang. Go listen to the wrestling album pod for that one. But on this one, same Captain Chameleon did a song called Jive Ol' Foe. And WWF, once again, decided that they were going to take from him, and we get Slick's Jive Soul Bro. So what you're going to hear now is the beginning of Jive Soul Bro, and then we're going to, Jive Ol' Foe, and then we're going to integrate Jive Soul Bro. We are going to do a mashup so you can hear the two different versions of this, and you can definitely tell where they interconnect. So let's give this song a listen. We'll be right back.
brother. Well, I met this lady and told her quite a story. Said I love her forevermore. But the trouble is, I tell the same story to every girl that walks through the door.
This is the slick star talking at your honey. Well, first they love me, and then they don't. Sometimes they do it, and sometimes they won't. So I said to this girl, hey, you get out. And she got to her feet and began to shout. You a dinosaur, bro, a dinosaur, bro. And you always lying to your friends. You a dinosaur, bro, a dinosaur, bro. And you never get nothing in the end. What you talking about, ladies? This is the sex they're talking to you. Don't do nothing but tell the truth. Well, they thought this dude might learn a lesson, but I didn't learn a thing at all. While late last night I was out there messing with a lady that was 7 feet tall. Now that was a big walk. Hey, baby, spend the night at my house. She said,
no way, you jack little mouse.
I said, hey, now, baby, can't take no more. So she threw me on the floor in a bigger floor. Singing, dinosaur bro, a dinosaur bro. And you always lie to your friends. You're a dinosaur bro, a dinosaur bro. And you never get nothing in the end.
Dinosaur bro.
Hey, wait a minute, everybody.
Can I say about that song? Iconic, also in some form or fashion led to the creation of Akeem and One Man Gang Riven to it, but really great song. I don't know how you don't kind of jive to it every time you hear it, so I kind of pop a little bit every time I do. So that's going to take us to our match we're going to talk about, so I kind of teased it a little bit. So Bam Bam Bigelow, they had this whole thing going on for months and months and months about who his manager is going to be, who's he going to pick, and it ultimately leads to him picking Sir Oliver Humperdinck. Now, we're going to hear the beginning of how that whole thing happened, and it leads into a match with Bam Bam Bigelow versus Nikolai Volkoff, who is managed by Slick. This is from the 9/12/87 Superstars, and I believe this is Bam Bam Bigelow's TV match debut, but it's been building for months. So we're going to play, like I said, the whole thing of Oliver Humperdinck being introduced. Bam Bam telling Slick to get him and his commie buddy out of his life, out of his stage, and then I'll talk about the match that it leads to right after we listen to that.
Bam, and he's mine, mine, oh, mine. Yeah.
Where is he? Bam Bam, look at that. That's not, that's Humperdinck. What's he doing out here? What is Oliver Humperdinck doing out here?
Wait a minute, brother. What you doing out here, dude?
I'm here to introduce Bam Bam Bigelow.
it the intelligence reports that I got?
Take a look at that. That is an impressive
monster. And Bam is making his entrance. Perhaps he can tell us what is happening.
Bam.
What's happening, my man? What's happening, my man? Give me five, baby. Give me five, baby. Blood.
Let me tell you something, man. You are not my manager. Would never be my manager if you were the last sidebar on the face of the earth, man!
What are you talking about, baby? We got it all figured out. What's the deal?
You and your commie friend better get out of my face now!
Who you think you are, you ugly American? I can take you anytime, any place!
Oh, yeah?
Yeah!
How about now?
Hey!
Goodness! Here's my manager! Here's my manager, Oliver Humperdinck! Ladies and gentlemen, Bam! Bam! Bigelow!
Bam Bam Bigelow, now managed by Sir Oliver Humperdinck. Iconic moment in the battle for Bam Bam. You know, the match itself, Volkov as the first sacrifice. 87 Bam Bam was so well done, and they really blew it, and where he could have gone post-Survivor Series and where he ended up the following year, losing in the NWA to Barry Windham at Starrcade. It was a very short run, but it was one of the best debut and pushes that led to a career of mid-card, unfortunately. Like, his early start leading into Survivor Series was super hot, taking on Bundys of the world, and then losing to Andre, and coming out of it, he's tagging with Hogan after Survivor Series, which I said earlier in the show. But ultimately doesn't lead to anywhere. And it's a shame because I think Bam Bam could have been a big star, especially in this era of WWE and WWF, I should say. And by the time he gets to WrestleMania, he's losing to the one man gang. So just an epic fail on WWF's part. And then they would bring him back later and he would have an even worse run, probably one of the worst main events I've ever seen from a King of the Rings standpoint. But that's a whole nother story. Had his moments like against Lawrence Taylor, et cetera, but ultimately I feel like he was really hindered from reaching the greatness he probably could have been, especially at this time in 1987. But anyway, probably one of the better Volkov matches I've seen. It's short. He's bumping for Bam Bam. He goes over the top rope twice. He gives Bam Bam a big man to debut with on national TV who has somewhat of a name value. And this match is really the Bam Bam show. He wins with a flying headbutt off of the ropes. Two stars. This debut was big time in 1987, and the build to it with the manager gimmick absolutely ruled. So definitely check this out, mainly for the introduction of Humperdinck and the payoff. And the match itself is not too bad for a syndicated Nikolai Volkov match. All right, so our next, song leads into a six-man, also on Superstars, but this one is by Hillbilly Jim and Gertrude. And it's his follow-up from the Don't Go Messing With a Country Boy, but it's very different. It's a love ballad, a country love ballad to boot that will hit you between the eyes, make you sad, and make you cry. But not really. We're going to play the song, and now we'll talk about the match that it represents here in 1 second. But here is Hillbilly Jim and Gertrude with Waking Up Alone.
I just had a dream about you, a dream that you were home, sweet home. Then I woke up without you, another morning waking up alone.
Another night, another fight, it seems it never ends. Another town, then another show. Tonight I'll be a hero with thousands of friends. Tomorrow I'll be waking up alone. My God, I'm tough. Lord knows I'm big and strong. just waking up alone.
Country love ballad with an electric guitar playing on it. Anyway, the match is Junkyard Dog, Hillbilly Jim and Billy Jack Haynes versus Magnificent Morocco, Bob Orton, and Ron Bass. This is from 7/18/87. This one is mostly angle, as what it does is it furthers the breakup of Morocco and Orton that has been in storyline for a while. They lost a big match of the Kingdom Connection at WrestleMania, and this one seems to take it over the edge a little bit. So I will let you listen to the end of this match, and then I'll come back for final commentary on this.
Look at that maneuver! Morocco coming over with Orton. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, my goodness. Did you see that? Meanwhile, the referee's been counting. And Hillbilly Jim, I think it's going to take it on the counter.
Winners of this bout, as a result of a countout, the team of the Junkyard Dog, Billy Jack Haynes, and Hillbilly Jim.
That was a cheap, cheap victory. Very cheap. Well, Morocco's a little dissatisfied with Orton. That's called dissension among the ranks. But let's go back up to ringside and take a look. The festival is beginning. We have to watch this. This is disgusting. Hillbilly Jim. Good time. The Junkyard Dog. Billy Jack Haynes. All right, let's go back and pick up some of the action we saw in the latter stages here.
Orton was already out of the ring.
Orton went outside. See, now over here, he thought it was either Hillbilly Jim or Jack or somebody. He gave him a shove. He did not know it was Morocco. Morocco did not take too kindly to it, naturally. He says, what are you doing? And he gives him a shove, as you can see. And this is what started. And there's a little dissension up between these two.
I imagine they'll straighten it out a little bit later on. Let's take you now, ladies and gentlemen, to our special update.
So based on the ending you heard with them playing Country Boy and them doing their little dance and all that, Billy Jack Haynes, who would go on to lead a life of not fun, again, another wrestler in the news, just like Vince McMahon is in the news for apparently at this moment in time, he has killed his wife, but has had issues for years. But it's a very different time in the 87, him, JYD, and Hillbilly Jim are having a good time celebrating the end of the match. Just goofy fun. And then he's with some of the era's biggest stars. And let's not forget, according to the song, by God, Hillbilly is tough. And Lord knows he's strong, but he hates waking up alone. So I'll go 1.5 on this match. Again, another fun little syndicated match in moment in time of some of the era's biggest stars. All right, next song. Another pretty fantastic hit, Girls in Cars. And at first, I struggle with this one a little bit because we kind of like Talk Cranking Up is made for younger generation seem to fit the Young Stallions. Girls in Cars is, and the video is pretty goofy too. Obviously, it's about girls and guys looking at girls. And I have a hard time looking at Tito Santana in that way because I'm used to old school Tito for me. So Tito in this era of being Girls in Cars is hilarious to me, and this whole vibe of what the song represents. Same thing goes for Rick Martel. So basically, they're supposed to be these sex symbols. And I don't know, maybe they had this planned in the can before Tom Zink left, which made more sense if you're going to look at it from a Can-Am connection. But for the song to be for Strike Force always makes me laugh a little bit. But nonetheless, the song is quite the banger. Very well-known song. And it's going to lead us into a match from Philly that we will talk about here after we listen to the song. Girls in Cars, Strike Force, Rick Martel, and Tito Santana, the theme song for, as of this match that we are talking about, your brand new WWF Tag Team Champions. So the match we're going to talk about is from the Philly Spectrum. It is Strike Force versus Islanders, and it is from the November 7th, 1987 Spectrum card. The irony of this match is Strike Force winning the tag team titles from the Hart Foundation aired the same day as this event in syndicated TV. So this match, the titles are on the line. So brand new champions on TV, brand new champions at night, titles on the line against the Islanders. This feud had built really well with the Islanders going heel on the K&M connection. And then Zink kind of bailed out on it after a contract dispute. And they basically shit on him as a coward and a shitty partner for Martel. And in the end, after time, Santana joins Martel in this fight with the Islanders, which, by the way, reunites a team from the AWA because Santana and Martel were a tag team in the early 80s. And if I were to recommend one match for everyone to go check out, because just like me, I'm sure the majority of you didn't realize until, or if you do realize it, I didn't realize it until a few years ago when I was doing another pad and came across this match. But there's an AWA match between Santana and Martel, and they're not called Strike Force then, but a really good match with the High Flyers of Jim Brunzell and Greg Gagne in AWA. It's from 8/29/82. I recommend you guys go check it out. I think when I looked at it, I think I watched it, I went like 4 stars on it. So 8/29/82, High Flyers versus Santana and Martel. So Martel and Santana were a team 5 years prior to them becoming Strike Force. So this match itself is pretty great. The Islanders, absolutely vicious heels, way better than they were as faces. When they were faces, I think most of us, you can remember, if you remember that generation, they were more of a jobber to the stars kind of tag team. Tito plays the face in peril, takes a real good ass kicking. Martel gets lit on the hot tag. Martel, really cool spot. Martel whips Haku into the ropes, ducks as he comes back. As Haku comes back, he ducks and drops to the ground, and Tito hits a flying forearm on Haku. So he's bouncing off the ropes from the other side, which is a really awesome looking spot. And then after this, all hell breaks loose. So let's listen to the end of this match.
Oh, flying takedown. Is that it?
One, yes, two,
go. Martel back in the ring again. Mike McHugh ought to just get out of the way, I think. He's watching the wrong thing.
Hey, they're getting... Oh, again, Tom interfering.
The other referee's in now. He's saying something. He said what? Ring the bell?
I don't know. What's happening?
They're both trying to break up the action.
Come on, they got to break it up.
Got to break it up.
Thomas just pushed out a referee. Thomas blatantly pushed out the referee.
He's got to disqualify him, I think. Both referees are down. The bell, all right.
It's all over.
It's all over. Tito Santana, I think, is secretly glad it's all over, but it's not. They're still pummeling him. The bell rings again, as it had a few seconds ago.
They are still working on Tito Santana.
Double flying headbutt.
Oh, Martel's got a chair. Uh-oh. Martel's got a chair. Oh!
Martel with a chair, and boy, he is turned on. I'll level you guys. And the fans are for it.
We still haven't got a decision. I'm wondering who the DQ is on. I would think the Islanders, but, well, let's see.
Let's get the announcement.
The referees have disqualified all four wrestlers. The official decision, a double disqualification.
I think Strike Force had the victory until Martel used the chair.
Double DQ finish. Underrated feud with these two teams. This match is probably about 3 stars. You know, Madison Square Garden is greatly covered on the majority of our pod feeds, mostly on PTPN. The mothership did a lot of the Madison Square Garden shows. But really go out of your way sometimes to look at some of the other shows from Philly and Boston, etc. There's some real hidden gems that in 1987, had I known they existed, I probably would have shit my pants to watch. I'm just saying. So there is more to the Madison Square Garden. Like I said, you got Boston, you got Philly, you got Meadowlands. Our next match coming up, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, is actually out of Houston. So there is a potpourri of these house show type things that aired Capital Center on YouTube. YouTube is, I will say it here, the majority of the stuff that I watch. For all my pods, for the most part, I find on YouTube, which sometimes has a greater plethora of material. Well, not sometimes, all the time, than anything you're going to find on Peacock. So definitely go out of your way to watch this match. And then I'm going to transition to our next song, which will take us to Houston. So if you only knew, listen, this song is the Land of a Thousand Dances for this album. The stars that are in this, the one-on-ones, the video for this is really good because you got your solo singers, you got your group singers, and it's an underrated song. I love it. I think it's really well done. I think it's short, it's simplistic, it's catchy, it's an earworm. What I'm going to play for you is a live performance from the Slammy Awards, but it's mostly lip-synced. As I said earlier, the other thing I really love about it is it highlights the Hogan-DiBiase feud in this group song, in a feud that's going to go another 5 to 6 months, cultivating, like I said earlier, really around the main event in February of 88. And Hogan and DiBiase definitely have their points in the song where it's just them directly talking to each other. It's catchy as fuck. It's an earworm. And also, Jimmy Hart and Coco Beware also stand out in their voices, in their solos as well. But everybody has a piece of the pie. But for me, it's mainly thinking about Hogan and DiBiase and all the other wrestlers singing the kind of like the chorus, and then those two getting their one-on-one segment towards the end of the song. Really underrated song. I enjoy this song quite a bit. I can listen to it constantly. I know the words. It's easier to memorize even here in 2024, 1987, Sean. In 2024, I still know the words. I still know the song. And I could totally sing it if I'm in a car with a wrestling fan and just want to sing. So let's give a listen to the song, and then I'll talk about the match from Houston we're going to talk about right after we listen to it.
I heard a lot about El Chatham. That really doesn't matter to me. A lot of you guys want to see me in agony.
But the measure of a man,
understand,
is more than your comic pattern.
It's the way I'll make you eat those words that matter.
If you only knew what I'm gonna do to you, you'd be running.
I think you'll see, because of me,
you need reconstruction.
If you only knew what I'm gonna do to you, you'd be running out of here as fast as two feet could carry you.
Your destiny belongs to me.
Whoa.
If you only knew.
Yeah, everybody's got a prize, huh? I'd like to butt you up real, real bad.
The other funny thing about this video is, just like Land of a Thousand Dances, the majority of the wrestlers just stand around and wiggle back and forth and clap and clap and clap and clap. So it's almost the same exact video, just a different song, which is pretty interesting. But yeah, so that's an underrated favorite of mine, If You Only Knew. And what it does is it transitions. So like I said, you heard me talk about how I like how it kind of pinpointed the Hogan DiBiase feud. Well, that's going to take us to Houston for a Hogan versus DiBiase match for the WWF title. It is from December 10th, 1987, Houston. Coming out of Survivor Series, this feud heats up because Andre won the Survivor Series. Now Hogan's full on going against DiBiase on the journey to where we end up in February at the main event for the Andre rematch. And Hogan defending his title here. Andre comes out with DiBiase, and so does Virgil. This feud, with for me at the time, was everything WWF, next to Savage and Honky Tonk Man at the time. I love the house shows. PWI was always must-read for the arena reports, so I could see what was going on around the country in matches. It was like a whole new world of BS out there. And today, where every result's at your fingertips in house shows, see very tropey and watch rinse repeat, versus back then where you would see this obscure match that you never thought you would see. Sometimes they had face versus face. Sometimes they had heel versus heel. Sometimes they had match classics. So that's why I tell you guys to always go out and seek some of the other things beside Madison Square Garden, because there's some hidden gems in some of those shows, much unlike today. So the commentary, Mike McGurk, everybody knows good old Mike McGurk, female, Pete Doherty, and Bruce Pritchard himself. Doherty's voice is the shits and sounds like he smoked four packs a day. He's very nails on the chalkboard, like I can barely listen to him. Anyway, Hogan destroys instantly DiBiase with a clothesline and atomic drop over to the top rope. Andre, one thing I've also noticed about Andre on his TV appearances in the 80s, 87, 88, if he's not in a wrestling outfit, he only has one outfit. It's the same jacket, same pants, same shirt. That he wears on all the loops every house show. And you know what I'm talking about. It's almost like a checkerboard coat pocket. I guess my only thing would be you can't imagine there was a big market for Andre type of clothes to be bought somewhere. So maybe that's why he only brought the thing and you have to keep the suitcase light. Hogan doing mat wrestling and reversals until DiBiase shoulder blocks him outside. Hogan later gets control back, but Andre pulls his foot from outside on a charge to DiBiase. Ref calls for a DQ, but then changes his mind and says Andre must leave the arena, and he's also fined $2,000, which is a nice pop for the house show peeps on this one. Kind of a cool little thing that, hey, you know, did you hear about that house show where they fined Andre $2,000 back in the day? That was probably more obscure. Today, they would probably do it on every freaking house show loop. DiBiase immediately from that point starts working over Hogan again until Hogan starts hawking up, and we will listen to the audio that finishes out the match.
Champion of the world, Hulk Hogan, he's just shaking it off.
He's gone crazy. The man, he's hit the point where he just can't feel it.
Hey, man, nice
Hogan
block.
Fires back at Ted DiBiase. Into the ropes, and a big boot right into the face. And what's Virgil doing up on the ring?
Now there's no need of doing that to Virgil.
There's no need for Virgil to be up on that ring apron. And
this DiBiase is what happens.
Off and hits over the top.
Get him.
Hogan wraps him up.
Hey!
Oh! Man down.
No!
Hogan prevails!
No! No, I can't believe it. Ted DiBiase got robbed again.
Ted DiBiase on the outside of the ring and inside the heavyweight champion of the world, Hulk Hogan.
The winner of the match, Hulk Hogan.
Virgil consoling DiBiase on the outside. However, there is your winner and still heavyweight champion of the world, Hulk Hogan.
DiBiase is used to getting his way by the way of money, and he can't get this or the belt. He can't
look
get
at this.
Look at this.
Hogan wants the referee to step aside. And he's begging DiBiase to come back in.
He's taunting DiBiase. Look at this. He's down on all four.
And DiBiase, I think, not really sure.
Match is pretty good. Hogan winning with a roll-up is kind of mad, but solid match between the two. I really wish these two had had a real feud without the Andre dynamic, and Ted as a heel champion would have been great. And we actually do see him as a champ for a short time on some house shows following the main event in 88. We can cover those at another time. Again, another reason why some house shows, sometimes you'll find some stuff on national TV we never saw Ted DiBiase as world champion, but there were two house shows that we did, which we'll talk about at another time. But 2.5 stars. Sala was some of the biggest wrestling stars you'll ever see. Again, in a time time capsule for me that eclipses or kind of epitomizes everything I think about with WWF wrestling for me in terms of the generation and why, you know, most people know me that I really love NWA wrestling for a reason, but this time frame in WWF is also one of my favorites. You just don't hear me talk about it very often, hence why this album, doing this pod tonight, probably gave me a chance to kind of talk about that a little bit, so that's cool. All right, so we have one final song, and this song is going to close out this episode of Territorial. It is Gene Okerlund's Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo. This video, and so we're going to play the video for this to end our pod tonight. It's very Hot for Teacher, very I Want to Rock, very We're Not Going to Take It. Gene in a blue hair wig singing with Rick Derringer, Hogan on guitar, the teachers and students dancing together. You have a principal in it. At the end, you'll hear it. Mean Gene being very dirty, trying to get with the teacher. It's fun shit. It's tropies, and it's an 80s music video through and through. So with that, we are going to end this episode of Pile Driver, the album Territorial, with Gene Okerlund's Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo. We hope you enjoyed this walk down memory lane. I know I certainly did. Some of the matches, all the songs from the Pile Driver album. This has probably been has been an absolutely fun pod to do for me tonight. So hopefully you enjoyed it as much as I did. So enjoy listening to Gene Okerlund's Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo, and we will see you the next episode of Territorial here on the North South Connection. Good night, everybody.
Attention class, attention. We are about to be joined by Professor Dexter Peabody.
Hi, Miss Brooks. Good to see you. Hi, class.
Hello, Mr. Peabody. Professor Peabody is our music appreciation expert. Now, today we will be screening a special film on Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. Now, as you know, Mr. Peabody has never let us down with his presentations. And if you recall, his last film combined the orchestration of Tchaikovsky and the migratory path of the African tsetse fly.
Thank you very much, Miss Brooks. And of course, you all remember well the elements of my last production, the music of Mozart in E minor, along with the number of wrinkles in the Native American buffalo lips. But I think this is yet my greatest production.
Miss Brooks?
Yes, Principal Winthrop.
I assume your music appreciation class is about to begin.
Yes, Principal Winthrop. Everything is under control. Now, class, please sit up and let's pay attention to Mr. Peabody's film. Now, Johnny, get the lights, please. Mr. Peabody!
Stop moving when it first took hold. It was a warm spring night in the old town hall. There was a few dollar chuckers, they were laying it down. Cause they knew I'm never gonna lose that funky sound. Rock and roll, hoochie coo.
I think so, right?
All right!
Mr. Peabody!